The students who don't want to take I-STEP, is suspension warranted? Why the Attorney General wants lawmakers to settle the debate over fenced hunting, how Indiana is tied to the coming Supreme Court decision on Obamacare, and the right to try bill. That, plus the time debate, the governor's contribution to the gridiron dinner, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 6, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, I-STEP testing is underway, and it has led to the suspension of a student in Muncie whose mother insists he shouldn't have to take the standardized test. Deborah Hardy sent a letter to Cowan Community School Corporation in Muncie asking that her son be removed from I-STEP testing. Her request was denied, and her son was given a three-day in-school suspension. Hardy still doesn't want her son taking the test.
This goes towards the funding of the schools and toward the teachers. And it's not fair to put these children through these long hours of testing, which doesn't come back to prove anything for them.
Should students be required to take I-STEP? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Tim Berry, is it fair to make kids take I-STEP?
Well, it certainly is something that schools are evaluated on, performance is evaluated on. It's important that they be involved. I think what this really points out to is, you know, some of the changes that we probably are going to see on the horizon about some of the changes that are necessary within I-STEP. Certainly, Senator Kinley had a bill that we'll see what happens to that in the House.
And that bill says that Indiana should go away from I-STEP and go to a national standardized test.
And it basically allows school corporations to choose which of those standardized tests they would be administering. And put some of that decision-making back at the local level.
Well, the decision on what to do with kids who don't take the test is a local decision. There's another student in Lafayette who's faced with the same sort of problem. Should that be a local decision?
Oh, I think it should be, and I think it's perfectly appropriate. You have to take the test. You're in public school, whatever the test is, and I'm glad that the legislature is finally getting out of the business of telling I-STEP what it needs to include. So I don't really have a dog in the fight of which standardized test you use, but Tim is right. That's how you measure the school's performance and the student's performance, and we have to be able, and students have to be able to say what their diploma means. I mean, we're competing not just against students within that school or within this state, but nationally and internationally, and that's why you have standards. I mean, what happens if a kid stands up and says, well, I don't want to take algebra, and really, I'm not that fond of physics, so why don't I just have, you know, study halls all day long? I mean, where does that end? You've got to take the test. That's the way it is. Sorry.
But this is part of the backlash to what we've seen with the length of this year's test, which is longer than normal, even after the governor insisted that it be shortened, because it's been changed so many times.
Right. And I agree with Ann about the fact that you have to have some kind of a standard. You have to have some value in the diploma, if you will. But we've attached so much importance beyond just the student's competency to the test that it's become this monster that's consuming everything. You know, teachers are having to teach to the test because their performance is pegged to that. School corporations have to force students to take the test because they get funding because of that. I think it's a good idea to step back and reevaluate and say, look, The tests are for the purpose of determining how well our students are doing and how well the process is helping them get to that point and back off this pressure so that we can get about educating students again.
Yet the test seems to be going pretty well this year. We've heard about a lot of computer problems in the past and not many complaints this year.
Surprisingly well, given the track record that you point out and some of the technical difficulties, because you look at the bandwidth issue and that many, thousands of kids are all on there at once, that would tax any system. But it seems to be surprisingly working well despite these sorts of protests. In a way, though, I think this is a bit of a you reap what you sow scenario, and not just in recent years, but let's go back a few decades. Indiana and other states, we need accountability. We're going to hold we're going to hold students responsible. We're going to hold their teachers responsible. We're going to hold their superintendents responsible. We're going to attach dollars to it. And guess what? Now we have, and everybody's concerned. It seems to me if you don't require the test, what you could have is an odd sort of scenario where districts and teachers will encourage students to, you're not feeling well, you know, little Jimmy, I think you're got a bad, I know you're going to do poorly, and that my salary is attached to your success, so guess what? I think you need to, go to the Bahamas for the next 2 weeks. And so there's all kinds of ways that this could be gamed, I think, that we're not even imagining right now.
Well, and it already is. I mean, for example, on the evaluations, you have to show improvement. Well, if you've got a class, and there are several of these, where they're already at 100%, they get penalized. What's wrong with that picture? I think Senator Kennelly's on to something about taking a standardized test off the shelf and stop spending the millions of dollars. The problem is, by opting out of Common Core, we can't do that. If we opt back into Common Core and take one off the shelf, that makes perfect sense.
So, does that happen?
Does it happen? Well, we'll see. Certainly, I think it'll get a lot of discussion in the House. There's a lot to the bill that Senator Kennelly has. One of the things certainly that has helped this year in administering the test has been broadening and extending that window for school corporations to allow them to administer
the
test.
So while it's 9 hours worth of testing, it takes place
over
a number of days.
Shorter time period. So you have schools, you have fewer schools on at any one point in time, and that certainly has helped on the bandwidth issue.
Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller appealed a recent court ruling this week that found the state lacks authority to regulate high-fenced deer hunting enclosures. At the same time, Zeller again urged the legislature to update state laws so they directly address high-fenced hunting. The Indiana Court of Appeals recently found that the DNR has no authority over privately owned wild animals. Ann Delaney, who should decide this, the legislature or the courts?
How about none of the above? I mean,
We've gone through a whole series of events here where the legislature waited for the courts. The courts
waited said to the legislature, "It's your job." I got that. And actually, having Greg Zeller involved with this means there's less damage he can do on other more important kinds of lawsuits. So that's not necessarily bad. But I mean, I don't even get how this is sport. I'm sorry. Maybe we ought to just tie the deer down and let them be shot, and maybe that'll be satisfy
first,
some of these people.
You got to grow an oversized set of antlers first,
and you have to worry about inbreeding and disease and the spread of disease and everything else. Typical.
This is an issue that's been before the General Assembly for close to a decade now.
Exactly. The more things change, the more they stay the same. That's the story here.
Why doesn't somebody just come up with a solution? Is there no solution to be found?
Well, I think
how about that?
You know, there are those who want to look at this as a business interest. There are those that want to look at it from the hunting perspective issue of saying, is this really truly hunting or not? And that's why it's complicated. It's not an easy issue, and it's not really a partisan issue.
Maybe you've got
people all over on this issue.
Right? Maybe we could require that when they breed them in these fence enclosures, that they have to tag the antlers, so everybody looking at the ones over the mantle will know that this really was not a sport at all.
There are four of these facilities that now exist.
Well, right, and one proposal that has been put forth in the legislature is effectively to cap it with those. That if you're in existence now, we will regulate you. But if you haven't gotten into the business, if Ann hasn't already opened up her backyard shooting gallery, it's too late. That's one option. I don't know if that will ultimately have legs. But as Tim suggested,
antlers.
Or antlers, I mean, this is because you're dealing with property rights. People get edgy when any entity, a governmental entity, tries to tell you what you can and can't do on your property. You have the hunting. Already there's a natural sensitivity about hunting and Second Amendment issues, which probably don't have really anything to do with this, but in a way someone will infuse that into the argument. So it's just highly charged even before you put Bambi out there, with his antlers. So it's I'm not surprised it's a hot-button issue.
Will it be solved this year?
There are several things that have to happen for it to be resolved, and none of them seem to be in place to let it happen. But you've got an agency in the Department of Natural Resources, DNR, that has tried to regulate this, been told by the courts that it can't, and the legislature has not stepped in and given us guidance on all of this. And I don't think any of those things are going to change this year. And so I think the answer to your question, Jim, is no, nothing seems like it's going to happen. But I wish something would, because John talked about the property rights. It's very serious. It's a very serious issue from that kind of perspective. I agree with Ann. It's not very sporting. I think what we really should think about, Ann, is finding a pool, growing some really big fish, and then just plucking them out with a net and then selling them to these people as trophies. We could make a killing.
That's a thought. Or maybe we could arm the deer.
Oh, that's a better thought.
Probably not going to happen either. All right. The future of health care in America is in the hands of the United States Supreme Court this week. Justices heard arguments in a case challenging the Affordable Care Act. It's a case similar to one filed by 39 school districts in the state of Indiana. The Supreme Court appears divided over the tax subsidies that make insurance affordable for millions of Americans. John Ketzenberger, is this do or die for Obamacare?
It seems like it could be. They had the arguments this week. The state of Indiana has argued in favor of ending the subsidies. And if those subsidies go away in these, I think it's 34 states, then it changes the marketplace. It makes it harder for people to buy insurance, and you could have a situation where the marketplace dries up. If the marketplace dries up, then you can't buy insurance, and you have a death spiral in terms of the market. So whatever the court does, it could have, the lasting effect on the future of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, the Indiana case is on hold, but the Attorney General filed a brief in this case. Can we expect that the Indiana case goes away when there's a ruling?
Oh, I would think so. I mean, they're all dealing with the notion of the constitutionality of these subsidies. Granted, one involves school districts and the state's litigation. Other states are variations on the theme. So I think, yes, one would go away. I think the biggest factor probably in favor of status quo, and I'm sure purists who follow the judiciary would say that these issues should be and are always decided solely on the merits and of the arguments, but I think if you looked at the oral arguments this week, some of the questions effectively were about, if we had to go backward now, what would be the what would be the toll? And you have groups now that are saying, X number of people would die because maybe that's overly dramatic, but because they would be deprived of care they have now. The fact that it is already so ingrained and so many people are on it, I think the Supreme Court is not blind to that. I think the odds would be that they would keep the status quo.
So Republicans keep saying that they want to do away with Obamacare, and certainly the Republican-controlled Congress keeps voting to that effect. Would you like to see Obamacare go away, or do you just want to keep the issue?
Well, I think certainly we want to change the way it's been impacting businesses across this country. It's having a negative impact on employment. I think what this really truly shows, though, is the pure genius of Indiana's response through the Healthy Indiana Plan 2.0.
How so?
Because it's an employee-based plan, not a government-based plan forcing how it's going to be administered and who it's going to be administered through. It puts the decision back with the individual.
That could not be more wrong. I mean, the Healthy Indiana Plan that has been expanded here is Medicaid, which is a government program. Okay, they tweeted it a little bit, but it's Medicaid. And what's ironic about this is you've got the Attorney General of Indiana and the Governor of Indiana wading in on this half-baked idea of states' rights, trying to deprive tens of thousands of Hoosiers of health care. That's what's going to happen with this. It is not going to the provision for the subsidy is affecting tens of thousands of Hoosiers, giving them
194,000.
Thank you. 194,000 Hoosiers get federal money to help them afford health care on the private market. And our governor and our attorney general want to take that away.
But it's
shame
the employer mandate.
On them.
I mean, it's being paid
shame
for on the employer
on
mandate
them.
Of $2,000 for every business on every employee that they
unemployment
employ.
Has shrunk, okay? Well, all your claims about how this is going to be a job killer are not true, okay? And we had 350,000 Hoosiers without health care in this state, 350,000 of them, and they're finally going to be covered, and you guys want to take it away. That's the long and short of it.
It's being covered because the governor came with a respectable, responsible approach.
That doesn't cover these people who will have the subsidies taken away from them.
You know,
them.
The only way you dodge some of these bullets, when you talk about the mandates on employers and this, single payer, which is something.
Which is the way it ought to
which
be.
Which is, of course, the irony here, I guess, is that the Obama administration plucked off the shelf a largely Republican designed plan, which is what this is, right. When in fact, maybe in retrospect, based on the arguments on these issues, they would have been better off going for a single payer.
Because it shows you, when it's their plan under Obama's name, it has to be bad.
All right. Still with health care, a state Senate committee will vote next week on the Right to Try bill. The bill would allow patients to take medications that haven't been approved by the FDA. The bill passed the Indiana House unanimously. Five-year-old Jordan McLinn was at the hearing with his mother. McLinn has Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and two companies are currently experimenting with drugs that could help him. The incurable disease will likely render him unable to walk within 5 years and possibly dead by the age of 20. His mother, Laura McLinn, testified on his behalf.
This bill is very important because he doesn't have time to wait on all of those phases for the FDA.
John Schwanes, is that an area where the General Assembly should be making decisions?
Well, on the one hand, I suppose the argument would be when you're dealing with somebody's private decisions about health care and their longevity, no. But I guess the counter is the General Assembly here and elsewhere, they've set up a very elaborate system that makes sure that the pharmaceuticals that enter the delivery system of the health care system are structured, are safe, and you have liability questions. All of this, you're asking a question that probably is not on point. The fact of the matter is, this little guy is the best lobbyist. Forget all those high-paid lobbyists. Everybody should just hire him. This is when an issue becomes very personal, and he puts a great personal face on it.
Yet if you say we don't have to wait for the FDA, why is the FDA there? And what do you do to drug regulation in this country?
Well, I think that we've got a history in the General Assembly. I remember many years ago with Taxol and using it as an off-label purpose for some types of cancer, and the legislature weighed in on that. The larger question of regulation is a very good question, and I think we're due for a good hard look at how that whole system works anyway, because there are a lot of problems with it that go well beyond just the efficacy and safety of the drugs. It goes into how the research is done, and really the effect has been so far that we are not having the innovation that we once had because of the way this is regulated. And that's not to say we should loosen regulations necessarily. I think we look at how we do this and do it in a way that's better. So the legislature is trying to, I think, in its way, help with that, but I think it's best left to a regulatory agency.
Right. Part-time lawmakers?
Yeah, they're clearly out of their depth on this. Your heart has to go out to that family and to that child. I mean, it's heartbreaking. And I think you're right. To the extent that the FDA process can be shortened and made more efficient, but they're not withholding the drug out of malice. They're doing it to make certain that the drug does what it says it's supposed to do and that the side effects aren't worse than the condition. And that has to be tested by experts. It can't be tested by the Indiana General Assembly. Heaven knows.
Well, all the time we hear about undue government regulation, but you need some, don't you?
You certainly need some control. But, if you're a family and a parent who has a child in a similar situation to this young boy, you want to give them every shot possible, and sometimes you just can't wait. And that's the frustrating part.
You think this bill passes?
Well, we'll see. There certainly were some questions in the Senate. Senator Brown had some issues about, you know, making sure that the drugs truly are there to help. At the end of the day, a parent wants to be able to help. And if you tell the parent that they can't because the drug isn't there, that's tough.
Well, and not just parent. I mean, there is the instinct to help your loved ones. Goes way back. Otis Bowen, who was a
exactly.
physician and was governor of Indiana. What was it, Laetrile.
That's right.
This was a banned substance, but he was arguing that this, because of a loved one, needed to have access to this. But you're right, Jim. This is, when you have state regulation fighting federal, it's just like some of the marijuana requirement relaxation, where federal law says one thing and the state of California right. says another. This isn't going to be resolved anytime soon.
It's now been 10 years since Indiana adopted daylight saving time, and yet the time debate goes on. A group calling itself the Central Time Coalition was at the State House this week. It wants to maintain daylight savings time, and its members believe that Indiana belongs in the Central Time Zone, not the Eastern Time Zone. They say there are too many mornings when the sun comes up after 7 a.m., and they call it a public safety issue. Here is Jim Disney, followed by Aaron DeBroda.
We have students standing on street corners in total darkness, students driving to school in total darkness.
It means families have to wait until 10 p.m. to watch fireworks on the 4th of July. It's a struggle getting children to go to bed when it's daylight.
Tim Berry, didn't the federal government settle this back in 2005?
I thought they did, but the more things change, the more they stay the same. Or I guess Chicago didn't get it right, because does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care?
The band Chicago.
Obviously, people
right.
do care.
It's 25 or 6 to 4.
Still, that's yeah, that's done. Right.
Yes.
Well played.
Yes. Does this debate ever end?
Well, you know, I'm still waiting. I've got that basket on my front lawn. We were going to be raining money and jobs and everything else if we went to daylight savings time. I haven't seen anything change. I was for Central way back when, and I haven't changed my position.
But
that requires federal legislation.
Again, to help everybody remember, yeah, what happened was Indiana voted to adopt daylight saving time.
Right.
The federal government then decided what time zone we would be in,
right.
and they said Eastern.
Right.
That's really all you need to know, right?
You would like to think it's a settled issue, but...
This is so like the federal government trying to tell you when the sun's going to set at you, the state. And
when's my basket getting full?
Yeah.
With the money that was coming from Mitch Daniels, promise.
Mitch Daniels is no longer governor.
So he's not responsible for what he promised. Is that what you're saying? Kind of like BMV, money from daylight savings time? Not his fault?
Long memories today.
Yeah. All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Indiana move to the Central Time Zone? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, this issue makes me tired. Last week's question was, should taxpayers help build a new soccer stadium in Indianapolis? 71% said yes, 29% said no. Get a load of that. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI, go to FYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Finally, the Indiana Gridiron Dinner was held this week. It's an occasion where the media and government officials tend to make fun of each other for the benefit of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. Governor Mike Pence submitted a video presentation. Here's a portion of it.
My little family and I have made a decision. I've decided to run for president of the Jim Shella fan club because he is such a great guy and the second best newscaster I have ever laid eyes on. I mean, in the words of Ron Burgundy, I immediately regret that decision.
And Delaney, was the governor funny?
I actually thought he was funny, yeah. And, you know, president of a fan club with two members, you and he, but, you know.
Oh, man. What if my feelings were
wow.
hurt?
Wow.
Do you have them?
Well, there's that.
We're awful glad to have the governor's contribution to the show, that's for sure.
Yeah, John, you're responsible for this event. It seemed to be a success.
We had a full house and a lot of fun, and I was grateful for the governor's contribution to the show and everyone else's.
And
we had a great
Ed
night.
Ed Delaney and Aaron Ketzenberger.
Ed Delaney and Aaron Ketzenberger were both on the boards as well.
It's fun, you know. Politics is generally a serious business, and what people do day in and day out at the State House has big consequences. It's high stakes. It's good that you can kind of once in a while just sit back, relax, and have a good time. That's what that's all about, and it's for a good cause, too. So.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. Governor's personality and comedic nature certainly came through in that video and did a good job.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.